Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to work when you can't work, part one. The questions this cast answers are, how do I do my work when I'm suffering from a physical or mental illness? How do I continue to be productive when I'm suffering? And how do I communicate with others when I'm struggling to work?
The value of the M conference goes far beyond the M conference, from the 5-year personal license to the video access of all of our speaker talks for a full year after the event is over. The M conference, October 27th and 28th, more than just a conference.
And this series of casts, it's probably going to be long because we've got lots to say. And it's for all of those people who are suffering from longer-term mental or physical illnesses, or just from a longer-term dip in performance due to outside circumstances, you know, other things that are going on in your life that sometimes affect the way you work. And in many times when you're ill, the answer is take time off. But if it's going to be a really long time, you have to learn to work while you're ill or while you're not up to par. And in this class, we're going to address some of the things that you can do during those times in order to stay productive. And so this is for you if you have a chronic illness or if you're just having a phase where, like I said, other things are distracting you or affecting you and you are not working at your best, whether that's health related or not.
Do I get to talk now?
Yes, you do.
I feel like a special guest.
You are a special guest.
On a show I invented, like, 18, 16, 17 years ago. Yeah, I asked to be on this cast. For those of you who don't know my voice, I'm Mark Hirschman, one of the co-founders of Manager Tools. Wendy and I collaborated on these show notes, and long-term physical and mental illnesses are more common than people realize. And the problem for many people is they don't get guidance like this. They take as much time as they possibly can. Then they're up against it relative the need to stay employed with, I need to get well. And in many cases, it ends with somebody losing their job, which only exacerbates the illness or the condition or the chronic nature of what they're going through. And of course, it affects your finances fairly significantly. And we're going to try to help you balance the competing interests of your need for rest or some time off with the interest of the organization, which is in your productivity. I think a lot of times big organizations are made the villain. And of course, sometimes they are, but sometimes individuals are villains too. I always think in situations like this, think about your coworkers and they're doing their very best and you're not able to work for perhaps 6 months or a year or 18 months or 2 years, or you're only able to work at a limited nature and your lack of productivity hurts everybody else. And the organization has responsibilities to them as well as it does to you. And it's in your best interest and the organization's best interest and the colleague's best interest. And frankly, the world's best interest if as many people as possible are as productive as possible. So the question becomes, what is the definition of as productive as possible for you? And how can we help get you there? And typically, if you get to that level, you won't have to worry about your job. You may not have a rocket ship career, but you will be safe in your employment and you will have a chance to take advantage of the resources that many organizations provide and hopefully come out of the trough that you're in and lead a normal, productive, healthy life. Is that okay, Wendy?
It's
Since
perfect.
I'm on your show as a guest?
Thank you. The balance, good. You're the yin to my yang.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to go over the outline. Wendy's going to do most of the talking. She's the genius of Career Tools, folks. But we've got 10 bullets, fairly long show. We think it's a multiple-parter, full disclosure. We know some of you don't like that. It would be great if we could boil the oceans and turn them into a cup of pure, clean fresh water, but we can't. Sometimes it takes a while. So, number one, keep in mind. Two, obviously, take time off during acute phases of your illness. On the other hand, work during chronic phases. Establish what you can come to think of as your minimum viable product. You can actually use work to get better. We're going to teach you a way to learn about how to manage your total effort at home and at work, and how to prioritize your workload. There are some mitigation tactics you can use for when you're cognitively impaired. You have to take advantage of the good times. And I'll tell you, Wendy's and I favorite, you got to build relationships. Neither she nor I are naturally a people person at all. And we have learned over and over again that Curatio's rule about building relationships either makes you incredibly successful, or it keeps you from going down the wrong paths because you have people caring for you and talking to you. So first, Wendy, you started your first bullet point, your first title is Keep in Mind. What did you mean?
So here's some things to keep in mind as you listen to this, or you read it, if you're reading the show notes. And this guidance, we're talking about physical or mental illnesses or things that are affecting your work. And we are not medical professionals. Mark decided not to be a doctor, despite the fact that that was at one point something he was going to do. So none of this should take place of advice from your doctor or doctors. If you're unwell or if you need help, see a professional. There's lots of ways of attacking common illnesses, and you might not be cured. There's lots of things for which we don't have cures, but there are things that can help you, and those aren't things that we can offer you. Also, you know your limits and your circumstances better than we do. We're going to suggest a raft of tactics that might help in your situation, and hopefully there's going to be more than one that's going to be helpful for you. But if they're out of the question for you because of the mental or the physical or the workplace restrictions, feel free to ignore them. Like, perhaps they'll work for somebody else. We're not suggesting that you work no matter how you're feeling. In fact, our first piece of guidance is going to be take time off. So we're talking about doing what's right for you, not necessarily, you know, following every single step of what we're saying, which is kind of different for us. Usually we tell you to do exactly this. In this case, we're telling you do what your doctors tell you first. We also have some guidance from a couple of months ago called Discussing Mental Health with Your Boss, which is about what you can talk about, how to talk about what's going on with you at work, how to approach your employer, what to say, what to do, and the risks of doing those things. Because whilst society in general is becoming more open to illness, to mental illness, to chronic illnesses, to understanding what's going on in people's lives and accommodating that, that doesn't mean that your specific boss, your specific employer, your colleagues are that open-minded. And we need to tell you that there are risks to everything, including talking about these things at work. There's a risk to this overall strategy of working when you can't work, which is the effect that it has on your career, your long-term career.
Yeah.
There's a balance in everything, and you don't get everything you want, unfortunately. And we can't predict what your boss or your employer will do. And often, unfortunately, you can't either. So we urge you to listen to that guidance before you make decisions about what you're going to do.
You know, I'll skip ahead when you talk about listening to the boss and so on. A big part of this, as we'll talk about later, but I was listening and I was thinking about it, is the nature of your relationship to your employer. And most people think of when they become ill and they have to deal with HR or legal or medical and the insurance people and so on, they start thinking themselves as having a relationship with the entire organization and its administrative oversight boards and so on. And I generally think that's a mistake. The most important relationship you can have with your company, and the one the company considers more important than any other, is with your boss. And having a great relationship with your boss will help you enormously in this. They have access to stuff you don't have. And the point of that is, I'm sure people are going, well, that'd be great. I'd love to have a great boss. I'm not saying you have to have a great boss. There are a lot of bad bosses out there. Otherwise, Manager Tools and Career Tools wouldn't have over a quarter of a billion downloads. You know, the number one business podcast in the world. And, you know, it's silly. Why? Because there's a lot of bad managers. And some of us want to be better. But just because you have a bad boss doesn't mean you can't bust your tail to have a good relationship with them, to talk to them, to tell them, to not fear them, to not hold things back from them because it benefits you and not the company. And I just got to tell you, if you want a great relationship with your boss, you can either work on it hard so that these kinds of conversations that are going to be tough at times are more palatable for both sides. But if you don't work hard in your relationship with your boss, you ought not to complain about the lack of a relationship with your boss.
It's okay, a two-way Smitty, thing.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, no. For each person, it's a one-way thing.
That's true.
Like the old joke. Okay. That's the old joke that marriage is 50-50. No, it's 100-100.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking to the subordinates now, the direct reports. So it's 100%. You have to decide how hard you're willing to work. And if you're not willing to work that hard on your relationship with your boss, that's okay. But you have to accept that because you're not, that's going to affect some of your ability to get some leeway, to have some understanding, to get some additional help, whatever it might be when you're chronically ill. So after that big overview, we immediately suggest that if you're acutely ill, you got to take time off.
So if you are too sick to work, you need to take time off. So acute in medicine means the crisis phase when symptoms are sudden and severe. So a broken bone, a heart attack, a mental break, even a common cold are acute because the symptoms are sudden and severe, depending on how bad the cold is. But, you know, and when you're
I was about to comment on that, by the way.
Right? Yeah.
A broken bone and a cold seem orders of magnitude different. That's okay.
They are, but they're still sudden and unexpected. And usually when you're at that stage, you are too sick to do anything. So, you know, an acute mental illness description includes symptoms of such severity as to prohibit effective functioning. Like literally, it means you are unable to function as a human being. And if you're unable to function normally as a human, then you're definitely not able to work. If you can't sleep at all, or you can only sleep, or if you can't or don't want to eat, if you don't care whether you're in bed or on the sofa or in hospital, that's acute illness. And sometimes when a cold's bad enough, you don't care where you are or, you know, whether or not you're eating. So, you know, acute illness means I can't function normally. And if you can't function normally, you can't be at work. You're usually incapable of getting to the office or logging on at home. Usually, you know, when you get into that state and you can't even remember what your password is, let alone, you know, any of your work stuff, then you should not be working if you're in that state. Take the sick leave, take the leave you have. That's what it's for. You're not helping your team if you can't think straight. Right? If you are making things worse by your inability to communicate, your inability to work, then you're not helping. You're making things worse. In fact, I'm laughing because just before this recording, I sent a message having misunderstood Mark and therefore caused 20 minutes of conversation between him and some other people in the team doing exactly that. Now, it wasn't because I was sick. It was because I misunderstood. But literally, I made a mistake and then caused a whole bunch of work. And that's what you do when you're sick and you just can't think straight.
Yeah, I have to say, this happens all the time. Not Wendy making mistakes, obviously. And I understand that we actually have a podcast called Go to Work Sick. We're talking about not chronic illnesses. But I'm always amazed by people who say, well, I just had to come in and I can't work, but I felt guilty. Look, lay your guilt and shame down by the side of the road, folks. Okay? If the people around you care about you, they don't want you doing this because you're guilty. Now, if you can work, and we'll talk about that, do go in. Do be useful. Slightly useful, however useful you can be. It will buy you goodwill when you actually need the rules being bent regarding health insurance and medical care, whether it's on-site or somewhere else. And it'll buy you some goodwill in terms of understanding and concern from your colleagues. But this whole idea is I'm going to go and drag myself in and be mad that I'm in there because I shouldn't have to. And the guilt or the shame of I can't work. Guilt and shame are not good motivators after the fact. So let it go. Do the right thing. If you're chronically ill, but now you're going acute, stay home. It's okay. That's why there are laws that will protect your job.
Yeah, you know, you make more mistakes, you drop more balls, you say things that you wish you hadn't. You're just making a mess that you're just going to have to unravel, and you're making your re-entry more difficult. Better to take 5 days off completely and come back on the sixth day and be productive and useful and able to work at capacity than to half work during those 5 days and then spend another 5 days unraveling the mess you made. The risks you take working in an acute state are worse than the risks of taking time off. Having to tell your boss you're sick and taking time off is less risky than trying to work through it and then making a whole bunch of mistakes that you then have to undo or have to confess to. So
don't do it.
Take time off.
Hey, are you in Charlotte, North Carolina? If you are, you should consider joining us for the Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences, September 20th and 21st. Andrew and Amanda will be there hosting a group of people, helping everyone in the room become more effective. Join us by registering at manager-tools.com/training.
Now let's talk about working during the chronic phase, right? Chronic illness, this is a situation where you're going to have to judge how well you are to work. And when we say chronic but not acute, that means that's a time where our guidance is get some work done.
And so long-term illness goes through phases of acute and then chronic and then acute and chronic. And acute is that I can't function. And chronic can be anything from I barely feel any symptoms to I can barely work. So, you know, there's a vast range there. And your job is to work out what you need to do, how much energy it takes from you or gives to you. And using that knowledge to be as effective as possible with the brain and body and energy and stuff that you have. So a chronic disease is broadly defined as a condition that lasts 1 year or more and requires ongoing medical attention or limits the activities of daily living or both. And I think the 1 year or more is kind of a, you know, it's a medical thing, but sometimes it's a couple of months. You know, if it's something other than a health issue, then it might be a couple of months. You know, I remember whenever somebody bought a house, it was really stressful and they were distracted for a couple of months because there's so much to do and there's paperwork and the people need stuff in the middle of the day when you're supposed to be working. And nobody ever was at full capacity when they were buying a house, and that's just a couple of months. So even that, which is a fairly normal thing for adults to do, causes a dip for a period. And so you can see there's a broad range of possible severity. So,
well, the way I heard what the example you just used is somebody who has been healthy for a while and then has a 2 month period where they're not 100% healthy should be careful about assuming, oh, I'm chronically ill.
Yes, for sure.
The definition says a year generally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yet at the same time, in that definition, it goes from barely able to work, to function, even not work, just be up and around at home, all the way to you can't even hardly notice you have any symptoms. So there's a broad range, but that year thing was helpful to me when I learned it years ago that no, just because you're having a downtime for 4 to 6 weeks because a difficult time in your family or whatever, the system doesn't think of that as a chronic illness. And if you apply some of our guidance and your employer doesn't think that's chronic, there may be pinch points in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a difference in kind of perception of what's going on and what should be going on, and some people, you know, the weird thing about chronic illness is because there's such a range in severity of people who have the same thing, if some people can be unsympathetic to others, you know, some people breathe through buying a house and others find it so stressful they can't concentrate for 2 months. And the people that breathe through it are usually fairly unsympathetic to those who are finding it stressful. So that can make things more difficult. You know, your colleagues might not understand even if they have similar circumstances.
Yeah. And look, everybody's performance varies from day to day, even those of us who are completely healthy. We all have ups and downs, and you're going to have to get used to that. And thinking that every dip you go into, you're sick, or that you have a reason, so on, is a bad way to manage your career, and it will affect your relationships. And if it affects your relationships, it absolutely will affect your career. You know, we've said before, the non-urgent emails that come into you that you need to reply. You have to be a good communicator, which is being a good counterparty when people talk to you. But you don't have to do those on Tuesday or Wednesday. You could wait until Friday. Email is not urgent, despite the way people behave about it. And all you have to do to prove that is take a week off email and discover nobody notices. But you can wait until Friday. There's all kinds of opportunities during your week to manage your energy level and your involvement and so on based on how your illness affects you. And everybody's going to be affected differently. And if you'll think of yourself as having a long-term plan and believe you're going to be and stay where you are, because a change of employer might be very difficult, even if you don't like this employer, it might be smart tactically in the next year to 18 months to even 2 years to stay here so that you continue to take advantage of the health insurance and the income and so on, and not have a
and
long period of time when you're not. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh, the goodwill. Well, that's assuming they're working on their relationships.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. Next point. Establish your minimum viable product. Folks, when Wendy and I were collaborating on this, she sent me this, and I thought, that's just perfect. It's exactly right. You have to spend some time getting to know yourself and what is something you can do that's useful, that's productive, that can be seen that way by the organization so they know that you're doing your best. They want you to get well, and they want you to have the time you need, and they want to get work out of you. They're not trying to wring blood from a stone. Very few organizations do that. Yes, those that do get put in the news. But, you know, there are very few plane crashes in the world. They all make the headlines. But that what that means is tens of thousands of planes land safely every day, and tens and hundreds, thousands, even millions of organizations all over the world care about their people, aren't trying to wring blood from a stone, and really do want you to be okay. And minimum viable product is one way to strengthen your relationship with your employer.
So what we're talking about here is thinking through your job description, what your job is, and thinking about what the minimum level of activity is that you need to do to stay employed, and then devise ways of reaching it, even on your worst days. So thinking about what's essential in your job, what tasks must you do in order not to get fired? What behaviors do you have to exhibit? And so what we're doing is, I guess, different to what everybody else is doing, in that we're trying to establish a baseline below what which you are not going to drop. And, you know, that's different, I guess, from thinking that you're going to have a superstar career and trying to work out what are the extra things I can do, instead with it saying, what is the things that I have to do? And what we're trying to establish is enough that your boss thinks you're just having a rough day, rather than why are you even in the office? If you're right. doing so little, or you're doing so badly that they think, why are you in the office? It's not a method for long-term success. You know?
Yeah.
Know, it's a short-term, you know, you're going to be fired. So we're trying to work out a way that you can reach those and the not the minimum standard, as in, you know, you're one up from a performance improvement plan, but, you know, whatever the standard is for your job, that you're reaching the standard. And then when you know what that baseline is, you can work out how you can achieve those things without compromising your health, or how you can do those things when you're distracted, or when you're suffering, or when your brain isn't working properly, or whatever. And even though we're recommending this, this will have an impact on your career. And that's not to say that, you know, we are recommending it. We're not saying that don't use this strategy. We're just saying that this strategy will have an effect on your career. Because, you know, if you think of a performance review at the end of the year, and there's a scale from 1 to 5, where 1's the best and 5's the we're probably going to fire you in the next three months, we're telling you to reach 3, which is the acceptable standard. But the people who have successful careers are getting 2s and 1s. You're not going to get there. And so there's a risk that it's a change to what's going to happen. And if it's necessary in order to balance your health and your life, then it's necessary, but know that you can't have both.
I love the idea of minimum viable product. And I think actually it would be easy to be confused at this part of the cast because this is the first time we've said, you know, this might affect your career. The fact is, let's be honest, having a chronic illness is going to affect your career. Minimum viable product will actually help you save that in many ways and make you seen as someone who is doing their very best for their employer, for their colleagues, within the limits that they can do. And I don't think there's anyone who logically can argue that companies should allow people who only achieve 25% of the workload of someone else to have the same upward mobility in their career. But yeah, I think it's important that you get straight in your head right now. This is going to be discussed in your performance review. You won't be as eligible for raises. You won't be considered for promotions as much as other people. Doesn't mean you aren't valued, doesn't mean you aren't useful, and certainly doesn't mean that you shouldn't be doing everything you possibly can to maximize your productivity. Being employed is what amounts to a social contract between you and a company that says, you're going to pay me, and I agree to do work equivalent to that. And if you're not doing work equivalent to that, the fact that your employer says, no, we want to keep paying you, not just because of the laws, but we want to keep you. We've invested in you. At the same time, there's no promises for anyone's career. There's not. And assuming that my career will be fine and that I see myself growing to this and this and this level, in some cases, you have to think again and not give yourself a new reason to be frustrated by your employer because they don't seem to be giving you what you want. I'm sorry. I could have talked for another half an hour, but go ahead.
That's why you're here, to produce the other side, the management side. So we're going to steal from software development and use the minimum viable product terminology. And we're recommending that you write this list down because, you know, chronic illness, whether it's mental or physical or just chronic distraction due to something happening in your house, it often affects memory and cognitive functions. So write this list down. It will help you complete the next steps that we're going to recommend, and it will remind you what you're supposed to be doing when you're having a bad day. So your list might look something, here's some suggestions, it might look something like this. Answer email within 24 hours. Answer the phone, return voicemail within 24 hours. Complete all the deliverables that are due today or earlier. Update trackers. So basically, do the things that are due, update where you're supposed to, and communicate. That might be your list. Your list will look something different, but it will probably have at least those components on it.
Yeah, this is simple. I love this. People are always saying there are 35 things to do. Yes, there are. And you're not going to be able to get all those 35 things done. So don't make your life miserable by beating yourself up that you can't do the 35. Focus on the ones you can do and make smart choices about with those. In this case, it's four things, right? Make sure those four things always get done. And hopefully, you know, in 2 days, it'll be six things. You realize I have some extra energy here. I can do some more stuff. The problem is I can't get all 35 done. So therefore I can't do any. Or four is not enough to make a difference against all 35 of my things. Or my boss won't like it if I do four. Well, I don't know a single boss who would like four less than zero. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing. We're saying, I'm going to commit to doing something I can do. And you define it specifically. You don't just say, I'll do four things. You understand of the 35, you look at the list and you say, more of this. No, not that one, but this one I can definitely do. And maybe you realize, no, there's six. And you told your boss you'd come up with four, maybe. And then suddenly you said, I refined it a little bit and now I'm doing six. Yeah, I love this. All right, sorry, Wendy. Blah, blah, blah.
No, it's good. And so this list doesn't include starting new products or working on tasks that require deep thinking. There's no meeting new people or developing improvements because those are more difficult on bad days. We're talking about keeping the trains running. We're talking about what the basic things that you need to do to continue your jobs. So if you were looking outside of it, you know, what the engine of the company is still running when you're doing these things.
Right.
And you start there. You start with the minimum, because some days the minimum is all you can do. And like Mark says, if you do the minimum, you can suddenly, and you find ways to get those done, you can then apply those ways to other things and you find that you can do more.
Yeah, but what if they can't do the minimums?
Then reconsider whether you should be at work at all. Literally, if you can't answer your emails, then should you be working? Are you so sick that you should be at home? Because going home and getting rest, medication or another treatment, or, you know, in the buying a house example, if it's just going home and dealing with all that paperwork for a couple of hours, that is an option and it might be the solution to having a better day tomorrow. And you have to use your best judgment. And if you are ill, then you will make mistakes, especially early on. You will misjudge days when you're worse than you think you are and days when you think you are better than you are. There will be days when you go home when you could have worked, and there will be days when you go to work when you should have stayed at home. And if it's a long-term thing, you will get better at making those judgments and getting through.
Yeah, and my favorite phrase in there was best judgment. Use your best judgment. You know, that's what it boils down to. And your organization, your employer, your boss, they're trying to use their best judgment too. And it's awkward at times and so on, but trust yourself and come up with something and see whether it works and then adjust from there. Napoleon, the greatest general who ever lived, said, when they asked him why he was so good, you know, what his strategy was, he says, first you attack and then you wait and see. You see what happens. I mean, so you do something and then you find out how it fits. And you make adjustments, and that takes your best judgment. Even if you know your best judgment is impaired, it's not your best judgment on your best day of your life, but it is your best judgment at that time. And I think we all ought to, for a minute, take a moment and appreciate the vast reservoir of human kindness and understanding that exists in other people. Mm-hmm. And I've seen too many people with chronic illness, when I talk to them about what they can do and so on, immediately start blaming the company for how the company doesn't care, because of course the health insurance does not care. It's not a person, it can't care. And they talk themselves out of this. And of course that makes them worse. If you don't believe humans around you care about you, believe in you, want you 100%, that is deleterious to your spirit, to your body, to your soul even, for those of us who believe in a soul. And I think that it's okay, it's helpful to say, these people around me care about me. And by the way, going to relationships, they'll be able much more easily to care more about you if you work on your relationships with them. Okay, I'm sorry. This will be the cast known as Mark Rambles On.
No, there might be some limitations that you have that don't affect the business so long as you communicate about them. You know, people without illnesses do this too. How often have you heard someone say, I'm just having a bad day, just ignore me? And on those days, people might avoid the water cooler and lunch and just work quietly at their own work. You know, there are days when people get out of bed the wrong way, and they just don't need people, or their child has been awake all night and they're tired and they know they're snappy, and so they say, I'm just going to sit over here and I'm going to do my work and I'm just going to be quiet today. And you can do that too. You might have to start slow on a morning after a rough night, or you turn your phone off at lunchtime and you sit in your car for 30 minutes with your eyes shut, or you have a no math day, which, you know, is every day of the week for me, but, you know. And yeah. And these are not so out of the ordinary that we would class them as adaptations. They're just normal behavior.
Yeah. And then once you do have your MVP, minimum viable product, you might want to think about having a bad day, better day, best day plan. In other words, there's some adjustment in MVP. Again, so you can maximize your productivity on those good days and meet a new minimum on the bad days, so that you're contributing as much as you possibly can, which is like money in the bank for when you have several bad days in a row, or more bad days compared to your average number of bad days in a week or a month. And once you establish the MVP, you have a line that you can compare. And the beauty of that is you can track your performance. Imagine at the end of the quarter being able to go to your boss and say, well, yeah, there was that week, but if you look at this chart, I established this MVP, and over the course of the last, what would it be, 12 weeks, over the last 60 days, I beat my MVP, you know, 41 of those days. And I think I send you the MVP, boss, so that you would know, here's about all I can get to right now. And I wanted you to know that that would, certainly I respect that it affects other people and so on. And if you're not doing this when you're feeling like you can do an MVP, you may be doing it when you're acutely ill and your decision making won't be as good.
Working out your minimum viable product will probably take a little while, so we're going to leave it here this week, and we'll be back next week with the next few steps in this process.